found this on the PNG National Information Center's FB page. NBC celebration of 50 years of broadcasting excellence begins today, November 29th. The NBC of
Yo, this is the Fat King Madzal saying, you're listening to WGXC Accra 90.7 FM. Ha!
You can go there with your family, and you can meet new friends in the library. When you're at the library, you can read lots of books, and you can find any book. There are lots of Dog Man books, which are my favorite books of all. When I go to the library, I read them. And that's why I like the library.
I'm also on a radio show at the library, and there was also a video making workshop that I did, and I did some animation, and I made a lot of new friends, and I laughed a lot, and it was really fun. My main reason of coming here is because it's books. Of course, it's a library, and I really like the wide selection of books, and they have computers and all sorts of stuff. They also recently did a mural painting thing where they painted the computer room in the back, and I got to be a part of that, and it was really fun. It looks really cool now, and I just really appreciate the library for being here, and if I had to choose between this library and any other one to go to, I would choose this one. I really like the Hudson Area Library, and I hope that it stays running for as long as I live, or maybe even longer, because I know a bunch of people that love to read.
Happy holiday
from Camp Hill Hudson Community!
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by Upstate Films, where membership provides access to world-class cinema, first-run feature films, art house films, live music, and more, plus advance notice of close-up series conversations with directors and actors and other special events at the Star Theater in Rhinebeck, the Orpheum in Saugerties, and traveling around the Hudson Valley. Information at upstatefilms.org. That's upstatefilms.org.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Bridge Street Theater in Catskill, New York. WGXC local business supporters help us continue to be a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement. Thank you, Bridge Street Theater.
90.7 FM.
Accra, Hudson, Catskill.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. Joseph Koenig reports for New York State of Politics that the U.S. House of Representatives voted 311-114 on December 1st to expel Representative George Santos. The lying Long Island congressperson is only the sixth House member to be removed in U.S. history. Local Republican Mark Molinaro and Democrats Paul Tonko and Pat Ryan voted to get rid of Santos, while Representative Elise Stefanik voted to keep him in the House. In October, Santos pleaded not guilty to 23 federal charges, including wire fraud, identity theft, lying to federal election officials, money laundering, and stealing thousands of dollars from his campaign donors. He's also been caught in hundreds of lies, some strange ones about how his mother died and what sports he played in college. Now, there will be a special election in the Long Island and Queens District early next year, in a district that voted for President Joe Biden by 10 percentage points in 2020. Read more about this story in New York State of Politics. Raymond Pignone reports for Columbia Green Media that after a Columbia County Board of Elections manual recount, Democrat Sally Naramore was declared the winner of a seat on the Kinderhook Town Board on November 30th. Naramore beat Republican challenger George J. Graham by 7 votes. Naramore becomes the first Democrat to be elected to the Kinderhook Town Board in 16 years. In this fall's election, Democrats also won countywide elections for judges and the district attorney for the first time in many years. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. Jamal Cutler reports for Columbia Green Media that the Hudson Youth Clubhouse has found a place, at least temporarily, to move after being forced out of their lower Warren Street space when Columbia County purchased the building they were using. Columbia County Youth Bureau Executive Director Dan Grandinetti said, and I quote, "It's a win-win for all. It's within walking distance from the old location. It's a great program, I think. It has great value and will stay intact. We were given less than a month to come up with an answer, and I can honestly say, with the holidays and the short time that we were given, collectively, the county officials and county board of supervisors did our due diligence so the program of great value can remain intact," end quote. Grandinetti highlighted the help from Hudson 5th Ward Supervisor Richard Scalera and the Hudson Catskill Housing Coalition for helping find the new space. The Youth Clubhouse provides after-school activities for the city's young people. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. And that wraps up the WGXC News Update. You can visit our website at WGXC.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the Donate button to become a WGXC sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a nice weekend.
The violence in Israel-Palestine hits home in America. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! With Dennis Moynihan in our weekly Breaking the Sound Barrier podcast. Three Palestinian students, friends since they were in elementary school in the occupied West Bank, now attending different U.S. colleges, were catching up during their Thanksgiving break in Burlington, Vermont. As they were walking to dinner at the home of one of their grandmothers, shots rang out. A man left his porch and fired on them, hitting all three. They all survived the shooting, but one of them may never walk again. Hisham Awatani attends Brown University, Kinan Abdelhamid, Haverford College, and Tahsin Ahmed, Trinity College. It isn't clear yet why the shooter, who's in custody, attacked the three. But as Kinan's mother, Tamara Tamimi, said on the PBS NewsHour this week,
two of the three of them were wearing the traditional kufiya, and if he was close enough to be within earshot, they were also speaking a mix of Arabic and English, as they tend to do. Our boys were, you know, don't typically walk around with a kufiya, but right now, in solidarity with what's happening to the Palestinian people, many Palestinians and other supporters of the Palestinian people are wearing the kufiya to recognize and be in solidarity with those who are suffering in Gaza.
The accused shooter, Jason J. Eaton, a 48-year-old white man, has been jailed and charged with three counts of second-degree attempted murder. U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland has said the FBI is investigating this as a hate crime.
This is a hate crime, and we should call it as is.
Wafiq Faour, a Palestinian refugee from Lebanon and a member of Vermonters for Justice in Palestine, said on the Democracy Now! NewsHour,
the actions of Biden administrations and Secretary of State Blinken and Defense Secretary that supporting Israel unconditionally and talking about the Palestinian victims and questioning the numbers of the Palestinian Health Ministry. This is on the federal level. And here in Vermont, for the last 2 years, we have living under siege too, from attacks from institutions here when we brought resolution to talk about Palestinian rights, human rights, and the protection of the Palestinian people. We found attacks from administrations in UVM, University of Vermont, on Middlebury, and unfortunately, from many faith-based institutions. And they called us anti-Semitic. And this atmosphere will bring to the American public that if you talk about Palestinian rights, you're going to be called terrorist. If you wear a kufiya like this, you're going to be called terrorist. And this is what brought this crime.
The Council on American Islamic Relations, CAIR, recently released data showing an unprecedented surge in bigotry after receiving 1,283 reports of Islamophobia and anti-Arab racism in the 4 weeks following Hamas's October 7th attack on Israel. In one heinous incident, 6-year-old Palestinian-American Wadia Al-Fayoum was murdered, stabbed 26 times after he and his mother were attacked by their landlord. The 32-year-old mother, Hanan Chain, said the landlord yelled, "You Muslims must die," as he attacked. News accounts of assaults from verbal to physical are coming in daily as people perceived to be Palestinian, Arab, or Muslim are targeted. Anti-Semitic attacks are also multiplying. The three victims in Vermont, Hisham, Kinan, and Tahsin, two of whom are U.S. citizens, attended the Ramallah Friends School together before college. Joyce Ajluni is the former director of the Ramallah Friends School and now the general secretary of the American Friends Service Committee. The Palestinian-American leader described the school, speaking on Democracy Now!
The Ramallah Friends School was established in 1869 by Quaker missionaries. It's a phenomenal place. I'm a graduate of the school myself. My grandmother, who's a Palestinian Quaker, graduated from there in the 1920s. So this is a proud place for many of us. And not that it's educationally and academically superior than IB education, kindergarten through 12th grade, but it's also the Quaker values and the foundations of peace and nonviolence and teaching tolerance and service and integrity, conflict resolution, you know, emphasizing dialogue and inquiry. That is what the school is about.
Even while suffering a spinal injury from the gunshot wound that landed him in the intensive care unit, Hisham Owatani was able to issue a statement that was shared widely. He wrote, "It's important to realize that this is part of the larger story. I am but one casualty in the much wider conflict. Had I been shot in the West Bank, where I grew up, the medical services that saved my life would likely have been withheld by the Israeli army. The soldier who would have shot me would go home and never be convicted. I understand that the pain is so much more real and immediate because many of you know me, but any attack like this is horrific, be it here or in Palestine. This is why when you send your wishes and light your candles for me today, your mind should not just be focused on me as an individual, but rather as a proud member of a people being oppressed," Hisham said. Of Vermont's three-member congressional delegation, Representative Becca Ballant is the first Jewish Congress member to demand a ceasefire, with Senator Peter Welch joining in that call. Senator Bernie Sanders has put forth a resolution that would condition any aid to Israel on an end to the indiscriminate bombing of Gaza, settler violence in the West Bank, and more. As we write this, a fragile truce has been extended in Gaza by just one day. The U.S. government, as a principal sponsor of Israel's military, has the power to impose a ceasefire, one that's far overdue as the violence in Israel-Palestine bleeds onto U.S. streets. I'm Amy Goodman with Dennis Moynihan.
And now, here is your WGXC Weekend Weather Report. On Sunday, rain is likely mainly after 1 p.m. It will be mostly cloudy with a temperature high near 46 degrees and a northwest wind at around 6 miles an hour becoming east in the afternoon. And on Sunday night, there will be more rain mainly after 1 a.m. with a temperature low of around 38 degrees. And on Monday, a chance of showers. It will be mostly cloudy with a temperature high near 44 degrees. And that is your weekend weather report from WGXC, 90.7 FM, Radio for Open Ears in Greene and Columbia Counties.
So, yeah, I guess I'll just start off by asking you to briefly introduce yourself and to talk about the group that you're a part of, the Audubon Society.
Well, my name is Carol Quantock. I am the vice president of the Audubon Society of the Capital Region. It's a huge, huge area. And we have, well, we have a board of directors and we have lots of members and a good support mechanism. We also do bird walks and have presentations on demand. Basically, people will call or email and ask us to do presentations about bird identification, which also includes how to use binoculars, how to choose binoculars as well. And bird walks are the most fun. We've gone up to the grasslands in Washington County. We've gone out to Schoharie County. We're planning a Schoharie Eagle Trail for next spring as well. So we do a lot of things. We're not huge like the Hudson Mohawk Bird Club, but we're there. And we're more than happy to answer questions and listen to people and hold presentations on demand.
The topic that I wanted to talk to you about today was bird collisions with windows and something that like homeowners could possibly do to help with this and just to kind of work on the overall issue because it does have such a big impact on birds. I had previously done an interview with the Albany Pine Bush and talked to them about light pollution in particular and that kind of impact that it has. So why does glass pose such a threat to birds?
They don't get it. In other words, they have no concept of glass, just like any other mammal other than human beings does not have a concept of glass. So there are two things that happen here. The glass can either reflect what's on the outside, so it can reflect vegetation and trees, shrubs from the outside, or they can see right through it, which may think that they can fly right through it. They think it's a hole because they don't know. They don't have a clue. When glass was first invented, it was thick and fairly translucent. Because of that, they didn't have collisions because it didn't reflect and wasn't transparent, so they couldn't see through it. Sheet glass wasn't in production until about 1902, but glass itself, clear glass, has been around since the early 17th century. So it's about the early 1600s. So yeah, that's a long time. That's 400 and some odd years that glass has been around and birds run into it. They don't understand it. They don't get it. And of course they don't. They're birds. You know, it's just that they don't see it. So sometimes they bounce, but they don't necessarily survive. And a lot of times what happens is the bird will sustain internal injuries. People will think, oh, it just dazed itself. It's lying there. I'll put it in a little box and keep it warm and set it free. And I've done that myself in hopes that it survives. But many times the bird will suffer internal injuries and it will die later. And that's a tragedy because you don't know. We have no way of knowing. Frankly, there's a lot of research done on bird collisions, and the numbers are just astounding. First of all, if you think of the amount of glass panes out there in the world, it's just beyond comprehension. And the estimates are anywhere from 100 million to 1 billion birds a year killed by window collisions. Some of that's caused by light pollution, and some of it is just by what we have in our homes. And that's where the homeowner can do something about it. There are several different ranging in levels of expense. There's bird tape. You can just put these little strips of tape down your window in a grid pattern. That's a little bit more expensive. Then there's the really low tech stuff like tempera paint. This would be on the outside of the window, not on the inside. So the tempera paint tends to break up the image. There are also another great little thing. If you're familiar with the sides of buses and vans where the window is covered by this film and people can see out, there, that is also available for windows. Although I would consider that more of a commercial product, because they say you can have anything printed on it. So, of course, if you're going to advertise your company or whatever, and also make a string grid 2 inches by 4 inches. In other words, 4 across, 2 high. Very few birds can fly through that, and they wouldn't if they can see it. what we have done, and I have a big, huge sliding glass door. It's an 8-foot slider. So we leave the screen on one side, but we made a frame out of 1x2s and then stretched a netting across it, and they bounce right off it, which is wonderful. That way I don't have that big, huge plate glass sitting there waiting for somebody to run into it. It works really well. I've actually watched it in progress. It's bird will fly and bounce right off it, and that's great. And it's very low tech, and it didn't cost us very much either, which is great. I think that that's the key here. A lot of homeowners are restricted by expenses, obviously. And, you know, if you're paying a mortgage, you don't want to spend hundreds and hundreds of dollars, but it's really important to keep the birds from flying into your windows. You know, they're endangered enough without us adding to the problem.
I guess like a lot of these kind of changes that are made are some things that happen after the fact, realizing there's a problem. Is there anything that could be done like when you're like constructing a house or first considering glass options to like stop it before you're like realizing the problem?
Well, yes, actually, there are companies out there that are developing glass, although that is more for the commercial buildings. There's etched glass as well. Many people that are in the construction business they're going to put in the cheapest things possible, you know, to sell. If you're custom building a home, yeah, that's a biggie. And there are a lot of construction companies, especially glass companies, that are finally getting with the program and, you know, finally getting into more sustainable and more environmentally friendly options. And even though regular glass is the cheapest or the least expensive, responsible homeowners, if you're building a house, you may as well ask for it, you know, have it installed or put the grid on right after, or the paint or film or whatever it is you're going to do right when your house is new, rather than waiting.
Now, before you had mentioned when you see kind of a bird that's just hit a window and like you take it in, put it in a box, what would you recommend doing if you come across a bird?
What I do is I will immediately try to protect it. And that's really what you want to do, because I happen to live in a fairly rural area, and there are other animals out here. And it is pretty well documented that if you leave a bird and it's still alive, it may not be for too much longer, because there are predators out there, squirrels, other birds like blue jays. Blue jays they're bigger birds. They do attack other birds. It happens. It's nature. But chipmunks, red squirrels, foxes, any carnivore will come along and take it up and becomes lunch. So to try to prevent that, just put it in a place where it's protected away from that. Or if it's a larger bird and it just seems to sustain wing injury, call a wildlife rehabilitator. That's really, you know, if you think that it's going to last that long, and mostly they don't. Sometimes they just fly away on their own and there's no way you're going to catch it. So I have done that. I've done it several times in the past, put it in a box, but not always. That's the little birds. So not always is that going to happen. That's bigger birds like hawks and owls. They can sustain broken wings. And in that case, you definitely want to call a wildlife rehabilitator.
You had spoken about changes made to the glass. Are there other changes that you could make in the area in order to prevent this kind of strike?
Well, there's also another really low tech. If you have regular window blinds, you don't want to close them all the way, because that will create a reflective surface on the other side. So that you won't help anything. But if you leave them open just a little bit, it creates a horizontal stripe across, and they will not fly into that, because they'll recognize it as something they can't fly through. That's the biggest problem, is they think it's something that they can fly into because they're seeking habitat. They're not going to recognize that reflection is something they just flew out of. They think that's habitat, and they're going to try to fly into that. You know, because they are natural creatures, they're seeking food just like anybody else. There's been a lot of research done as to how far up and how far out you should have your feeders. You don't want your feeders within 10 feet, because if there's something that scares the bird, it will take off and it'll achieve top flight speed pretty fast. And that's usually when it'll 10 to 12 feet, it'll probably fly into your home. A little bit out further than that is good. Put your feeders in places where the birds have a place to hide. within 10 feet of shrubs and trees and places where they can hide from predators. That's really important to keep in mind. And that way they're not flying willy-nilly probably into your home trying to get away from a predator.
Well, thank you for speaking to me today about this. And hopefully more people can be educated, and this is something that could, the numbers can lessen.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you for having me here. And thank you for speaking with me. And if anybody has any questions, just contact the Audubon Society of the Capital Region. We do have a Facebook page and a website, too.
You're listening to Waveforms WGXC 90.7 FM Radio for Open Ears. This program is Bequency, and my name is Mayuko. Bequency invites the local community to be inspired by the joy, beauty, and wisdom bird enthusiasts find in the nature of our neighborhoods. Every episode features an interview with local bird people. For today's episode, I spoke with Leslie Doyle, the president of the Rolif Jansen Historical Society in Copake Falls. Leslie's kind and loving and often humorous observations of wildlife in her backyards in busy Manhattan and rural Hudson Valley remind us to appreciate the here and now wherever you are. The here and now is also the culmination of people's lives before us. Leslie shares how the New Deal era environmental improvement program restored the trees we see now in Copake Falls. The trees had been devastated by the Copake Ironworks, which was an iron extraction and production operation that played a crucial role in the local development. I hope you enjoyed this conversation with Leslie as much as I did. Thanks for tuning in. This is Bequency. Okay, so could you briefly, well, introduce yourself and tell us what Rolif Jansen Historical Society is?
Okay, well, my name is Leslie Doyle, and I'm the current president of the Rolif Jansen Historical Society. And the society was formed actually nearly 50 years ago this coming summer of 2024 will be our 50th anniversary. It was formed by the town historians of five towns, local towns, of Ancrum, Copake, Hillsdale, Gallatin, and Taconic. And all of these are kind of united by the Rolif Jansen River. That's a major tributary to the Hudson River. It starts in Austerlitz and it goes all the way through Columbia County and empties at Lithgow into the Hudson River. And that's why everything is called Rojan in this area.
Yeah.
The Historical Society's mission probably best describes it, because we are charged with collecting and preserving and sharing local history, which we try to do. And we do this through programming. We do this through maintaining archives, maintaining an ever-expanding collection, and also through exhibitions. And we have a major exhibition every summer. So we are the repository of local history, and we have oral histories that we share. We have a very active website, and it's been our pleasure to really make everybody feel welcome there, and that their stories count and are important. And we have, you know, major objects, and we have like can openers from a local bar that closed that was important to people. So it's varied, and it's ever growing, ever expanding. And we're lucky enough also to be to have our own home, which not every small town has. So we are in a former church, the old Copake Methodist Church, which was built in 1892 and served the community for 63 years, but then in 1955 it was closed. The Methodist congregation was moved to Church Street in Copake Flats, as they called it, and the church was closed for 28 years and abandoned. So neighbors sort of looked after it and mowed the grass, but the windows were broken, the roof started to leak, and so on. But the local community saved it and rescued it and repurposed it and gave it to the Historical Society. So that is our most significant object that's preserved, is the church building itself. And it's a wonderful place to exhibit and to have our programming.
Mm-hmm. I also really like that you have small things like can